this simple machine. Cry over your missteps, Mr. Photographer. Lose that postcard in the mail. Sometimes you just don't know. Maybe you've heard it's time to go. The beer garden is waiting. The shooter searches the scene for evidence of the inclined railway, pixelated green and red now with trees and brick, that once ferried holiday-goers to the festivities raging over the city. He aims to take a picture there. He's just hunting for something to stand on. This is a story that opens in the shadows of cast iron rails, slipping in the sun, in the slope defined as rise over run, in a capsized hotel beaming its SOS across the wires. Up on the hillside, a stone pier crumbles under the weight of rising expectations, a generation of come-ons lost in the roar of the wheelhouse. He studies the screen but can't resolve the image. The engineer leans on his safety gate, hat in hand, the funicular dreaming a course skyward. The frozen gears of springtime, mechanical advantage is what keeps him on track.
The voice of Jeff Serkin, UTEP creative writing professor, reading from his debut poetry collection titled Traveler's Aid Society, released earlier this year by El Paso publishers Velis Books. Welcome, Jeff. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on publishing this first book.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Did it seem like forever in coming, or is this a timely, natural progression for you?
You know, I've been working on these poems for quite a long time. The earliest poems in the book are maybe 10 years old, maybe even a little bit older than that, some of them. So I'm happy to see it finally come into being.
Yeah, the trajectory of poetry books can be pretty bizarre. They can have taken a lifetime or, oh no, I pop one out every month. You never know what the answer will be.
Right.
And how long have you been teaching here at UTEP?
I've been teaching here since 2007.
And where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. And what brought you here to UTEP?
Work.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, good for us.
Yes.
We got you. All right.
And good for me. I enjoy being here.
Oh, well, so. I'm always happy to hear that people are glad to be here. That is a good thing. Tell me about the title of your book, Traveler's Aid Society.
There's quite a few poems in the book that reference hobos and hobo culture, which is something we don't see a lot in our country anymore. But once upon a time in the early 20th century, many, many, usually men, because of, difficulty finding work or circumstances in their lives, may have decided to hobo, to ride the trains illegally, or I could say maybe illicitly at some level. Usually railroad companies were okay with this because it would help provide. The hobos were usually itinerant workers, migrant workers, who would move from place to place to help with harvests in the West, usually.
Mm-hmm. Mutually beneficial.
Yeah, and so hobos would ride the empty trains out west to places where farm fields needed to be picked.
All right.
And then,
so it was migrant labor, fundamentally.
Yeah, basically.
Within the country.
And anyway, so there's this very large population of hobos in the country, and because of this, some organizations sort of were founded, sometimes by hobos, sometimes by aid organizations, to provide them places to stay in cities when they were down on their luck or just needed help. Traveler's Aid Society was one such organization at the time in the early 20th century. It actually still exists, but it started around the turn of the last century.
What is it about you that made this particular subject so interesting?
My interest in hobo culture, it may have started with my reading Jack Kerouac's novel On the Road. And I was teaching the novel. I was writing about the novel for my dissertation when I was working on my PhD. And I was thinking a lot about the romanticization of travel in the novel. And one of the things that the protagonist is particularly interested in are the kind of remnants of hobo culture that still exist in the late 1940s, early 1950s. So I was interested in finding out more about hobo culture because of that. But then through additional research, I also discovered at some point that Cincinnati, Ohio, my hometown, was once a kind of locus for hobos and hobo culture. It was kind of a crossroads, and a lot of hobos went through there. And one of the key figures in the kind of hobo rights movement of the early to mid 20th century was born in Cincinnati and spent his life basically traveling as a hobo. But he also founded one of these hobo aid societies, and he started a chain of hobo colleges, we could say, like places where hobos could get certain kinds of education, kind of vocational training and things like that. And anyway, so he was from Cincinnati. And so that further sparked my interest in this.
How old were you when you left Cincinnati, Ohio?
I grew up in Cincinnati. I went to college not too far away in Oxford, Ohio. It's only about 45 minutes outside Cincinnati. And I left for a couple of years in my 20s, came back, and then left for good in 2002.
So it seems like, I wonder if there wasn't a lot of subliminal imagery and impressions planted as you grew up around there, since the area was so rich in this particular type of history.
Well, I mean, interestingly, I never heard anything about it. It's completely, I don't know if anybody in the city actually is aware of any of it anymore. It seems to have been erased. Like after I discovered this, I'd read about Cincinnati as a kind of crossroads for hobos at one time. And I went to do some research in Cincinnati. I couldn't find a word about it anywhere.
And it was really, and no remnants as far as in the rail yards or anything, that no physical evidence of this culture?
Yeah, well, you know what? I didn't go like explore the rail yards.
Well, what was the matter with you?
Yeah,
Were you studying or something?
Yeah, I was spending my time in the Historical Society Library, I guess.
Which interestingly, wasted youth.
interestingly, the Historical Society Library is at Union Terminal in Cincinnati, which is the built in the 1930s, but in the 1940s was like one of the key rail hubs in the country.
Fascinating. Yeah. Now here at UTEP, you co-curate the Dishonest Mailman Reading Series. Tell me about that.
My partner and also a colleague of mine in the creative writing department, Rosa Alcala, and I, when we first were here in about 2007, she had been here for a couple of years already, but when I started as well, we realized we wanted to be able to bring poets to campus. We had the place where we had done our PhDs, there was a lot of reading series. So we thought, well, let's start a reading series here so we can bring poets that we know, poets that we admire to El Paso and try and start something here. And so we began somewhat modestly. We brought one or two people out, and then the first year and ever since then, we've had between two and sometimes six readings, poetry readings a year.
Open to the public?
Open to the public always.
And when and where do they happen?
They happen whenever.
And how do we find out about them?
Well, we usually do our best to promote them. We always make flyers and send out emails.
Okay.
Now and again, we've come into Louis Sine's show, Focus on Campus, to promote readings. There is a Dishonest Mailman reading coming up on November 9th.
Excellent.
A poet named Matt Hart will be here.
Okay.
Who is a poet. He runs a magazine. He runs a press. And he's also been a singer in several punk rock bands in the last 20 years, and his poetry is very inspired by his relationship with music.
So November 9th, where and what time?
7 p.m. We have yet to book the room, but it will probably be at the Bloomberg Auditorium at the UTEP Library.
So if I Google Dishonest Mailman Reading Series, UTEP, I'll probably find you.
I think so, yeah.
Outstanding. Your book is divided into four sections: real estate, the ledger, politics of the mixtape, theories of improvisation. Now, one thing I have to note is that I am unable to decode as much as I would like in many poems, especially when there are any kind of literary references to which I'm just unfamiliar with the information. Your stuff is rich with it. I like the poems, but I want to know more.
Okay.
And one thing that you did give is in notes in the back, you provide attributions, some brief explanations, some ideas of your references.
Yeah.
So I like that you did that. What was the logic as you were thinking through how to divide this book into four chunks, and any hints you can give me to help me follow your breadcrumbs?
The book kind of moves, I think, through a process of thought, I think, about the speaker's experience of the world and understanding of the contemporary world that we live in and its relationship to the past. For me, the section real estate, which opens the book, often positions the speaker in a state of confinement and stasis in relation to the structures of our society that guide and dominate our lives. Real estate, I think, becomes a kind of metaphor for the way, for instance, we take land and divide it up into tiny little plots.
Yes.
As a way, and in doing so, we kind of like lose sight of what that land is.
Nailed down and subdivided.
Yes.
Yes.
We cut up land into these tiny plots that we refer to as real estate that we make into property, which ignores the being of the land, you know, the temporal being of the land in time. We kind of lose sight of what that is altogether. And so I'm thinking, I think, through that first part about the way various parts of our experience, various parts of our world is often subdivided, made into property, made into objects and commodities, that makes it hard for us to see what our world actually is, because we end up living through our relationship to these commodities.
So it's a pinhole, a perspective on life.
Yeah, yeah. And I think as the book moves along in the section Politics of the Mixtape is thinking in different ways about reconfiguring that world.
Okay.
Reconfiguring the world that we live in ways that gives us some agency within it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should say that one of the dominating themes or metaphors through the book is music and the way we understand music. Music is, if you're to sit in front of a band or a performance or even to put on a record, it's a temporal experience we have. And yet, by virtue of the fact that we make it into records, make it into individual tracks that we can sell in a variety of ways, we take this temporal experience and make it into little commodity objects.
Back into real estate.
Yeah, it sort of follows
that same
model.
One CD at a time.
Right. And so I think in that second section, I'm using that idea of the mixtape, you know, which not every listener will have had experience with necessarily, but, you know, where you take different songs and you put them together yourself and you make your own narrative out of it. And I think that becomes a way of maybe finding a kind of agency in a world that's given to us as commodities, where we're told to be consumers. Gives us another way of living in our world.
Yes.
And so that kind of like plays out through the book. So by the time we get to theories of improvisation at the end, I think the speaker is finding a kind of agency in the world and finding connection to things in the world in different ways other than that which is prescribed for us.
I just love the abstract being brought into focus by a poet talking about his or her own work. And I do find oftentimes that the only key, is to really get to know the artist, the poet, a little bit better, find out how you think. So it's interesting to hear you speak and read. So although on November 9th for the Dishonest Mailman Reading Series, that's at 7 p.m., location probably the Bloomberg, but folks can Google Dishonest Mailman Reading Series to find out the location. You will be hosting that evening, not reading.
I will be, correct.
And hopefully you will be having various readings in the El Paso area from your new book, Traveler's Aid Society. And that's by Velis Books, and that's the place to find out what your schedule will be by visiting Velis Books, that's V-E-L-I-Z, books.com. My guest today, UTEP Creative Writing Professor Jeff Serkin. Thank you so very much for coming in. This could have gone much longer.
Thanks again for having me. I really appreciate
My
it.
My pleasure.